Welcome to Jobs in Tech. Welcome to the show today. Jobs in Tech in the house. Brad, what's happening in the world of technology and the craziness out there of all that crazy technology jazz?
Oh, there's lots going on. But I mean, I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. I'm used to, like, you know, what did they describe you last week as?
The monster truck guy.
Announcer.
Was I a little more low key today?
Absolutely. Where's the vibrancy? Where's the voice?
Welcome to Jobs in Tech. Yeah. Okay.
Is that better?
All right. Your monster truck rally announcer, Jobs in Tech.
Right.
Yeah, awesome. What do we got going on today? Who's in the house? Who are we talking to? What company are we talking to?
I'm excited for today. So today we have Justin from GuardSight, and GuardSight is a cybersecurity company. So I'm going to kind of hand it over to Justin, let him kind of talk a little bit about him, his background, and tell us a little bit about GuardSight.
Yeah, let's do that.
Right on. Happy to be with you guys. Thanks for having me. So my role, my background is kind of funny. I'm one of these guys who worked all over the place, a ton of different industries. The longest was actually in local government down in Garfield County, where I worked for 12 years. And then I decided that it was time to do something that was kind of a little more intellectually challenging than local government. So I kind of dove into cyber. I already had an interest in it anyway. I'd been a longtime Linux user, probably using Linux since about the year 2000 or so. So I kind of had a concept of some things in computing already. I'd been a network administrator at a place, and at the end of the day, I just really wanted to, change up careers. So that's what I did about 5 years ago.
Okay.
I went back to school, took some cybersecurity classes, broke into the industry while I was still working on that, and have just been in it ever since. Love it.
Awesome. So let me ask. I mean, I'm going to kind of throw a curveball at you here. I mean, what do you love about technology? What is that one thing that make you say, hey, you know, I love this. I can do this for the rest of my life. Help me understand what that thing for you is.
Yeah, that's actually really hard to put into words. Some of it is just kind of there's a certain delight that comes from being able to use, computers and computing in a way that that just saves a lot of time or does something really complex and really cool. Sometimes it's very elegant the way it's done. One of the things I've described to people is being able to accomplish something at a command line repeatedly and understand what's going on changes your whole view of technology. Being able to step aside from the graphical interface and to be able to get down into the guts of a system just changes your outlook forever. You can't view computing the same after that. So it's just kind of a delight to play with it, to push boundaries, see what you can do, and just have fun with it.
So it sounds like it's almost a challenge for you that you love, and just being able to build something complex and keep it going.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
And specifically in cybersecurity, what's interesting is it's not just what I build and make happen. It's what the bad guys do that is always fascinating to me.
Okay.
They're highly innovative. So to be able to see what they're coming up with and ways that they can think of to abuse systems is really fascinating. I don't advocate being a bad guy. Don't be a black hat hacker. But I have to admit that those guys can be pretty innovative.
With that said, I love it because we haven't really had a lot of security focused companies on the show. And it's kind of its own little animal. We talk about IT, we talk about technology, and the IT world, security is kind of its own little silo almost. Yeah, it's own little space. It is kind of you against the world, right? Even in your own companies, the security guy is almost against the other IT guys, it feels like. I mean, they're not, but it always felt like, dude, why is that guy not letting us do stuff? Geez, we got to have all these passwords. So, I mean, it's such a different space. And is it the challenge of that? Is that what you love? That challenge of keeping everything safe and also protecting from all of the craziness out there. Is that kind of what had drawn you specifically and the company itself?
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it. The challenge of it, just kind of being able to understand things across disciplines, right? I mean, people tend to get siloed in technology, right? Yep. People tend to be a developer and, you know, maybe you write in Go, or maybe you write in Python, and maybe you do specific kinds of apps. After a while, you kind of find yourself unable to work across those silos into other fields, where cybersecurity, you're touching all of it. So you have to have a good general knowledge and a good knowledge of, I guess, I would call it systems. And I don't mean that in just in the sense of
generically
computer systems, but yeah, generically, exactly. The ability to think across multiple systems in a holistic way. And it is really kind of mind blowing to do that. And then to be able to see little tiny artifacts, little pieces of data that, you can draw conclusions from and actually be able to find patterns that are out of the ordinary. That's just fascinating, a lot of fun to do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So with that, with talking about GuardSight specifically and the security world, how would you say you guys are kind of disruptive? I mean, security is a tough one because you're kind of at the mercy of everything else that's out there. What would you say is more disruptive in the GuardSight space?
Sure. So I'd say one of the things that makes us disruptive is the fact that we are to use the internal GuardSight term. We are weapons agnostic. What that means is we will work with whatever piece of technology anybody brings to the fight. We don't care. We will operate all of it. We've probably operated it, you know, for somebody else already. So the idea there is not that we are reliant on a specific piece of technology. What we're really good at is being able to utilize a lot of the interfaces that are out there, for example, APIs, webhooks, that kind of thing, to make all these systems work together in such a way that we're able to, you know, gather, if not real-time data, very close to real-time data, to alert on things that are out of the ordinary.
So, having said that, too, I mean, how would you consider your guys innovative and kind of cutting edge when it comes to cyber? I mean, is it just the fact that you guys know everything? Like, you guys have seen enough things that have out there, and you've worked on enough systems that you kind of have a better understanding, or help me understand that.
Yeah, and it's this is actually another one that's kind of hard to describe as well, because the technology aspect of it also includes the human element, and so it's one thing to have a bunch of you know, vendors sell a bunch of software that do certain things, but the fact of the matter is that will never, at least so far, we've never seen it approach complete solution to anything. What you have to have is the ability to operate all of that. So our technology is actually in our ability to train people to do this kind of thing, and to also have the skills to stitch all those pieces together, stitch all those threads together. So it's not that we have to know how to operate one system. It's we have to know how to operate all systems. And so, yeah, it's the ability to weave that tapestry that makes us different, that sets us apart in our ability to just bring in whatever anybody is using and use it for the benefit of the customer.
Interesting. So, I mean, I would assume that kind of requires a lot of skill sets from you know, your current staff and them understanding and seeing different situations. Having said that, I mean, do you think that's kind of what makes you, you know, kind of stand out and be set apart from everybody else, is the fact that you guys have seen so much? Or help me understand that a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. So it's so we've worked in so many different kinds of environments that we've seen all manner of attacks. You know, part of what we do is incident response as well as just monitoring and looking for these kinds of things. So yeah, we've seen how the bad guys operate. We understand it. And what we bring to it is just that holistic approach, that we have a plan of action for whatever is going to happen in a given day. That includes such things as automation. So the if I don't know if any of you guys, if either of you guys have ever looked at some of the data that comes out of the systems that people use to monitor for security events, but there's so many of them. If these are not tuned well, you're going to be absolutely lost. And the problem at that point becomes that you burn analysts out. They're looking at so many different things all day, every day that are the same. After a while, they just become numb to it. And so a key, one of our key, what would we call it? One of our key advantages, one of the things that really sets us apart and makes us disruptive is the fact that we can not only bring all that stuff together, but then we start to automate it. We start to find the things that are repetitive. We can develop processes for taking some of the load off the humans and using computers for what they're good for, which is doing repetitive, boring tasks for us. So that's, I'd say, what really makes us competitive on that front is the partnership between the human and the machine.
So I'd like to know if we can get under the hood a little bit, as much as we can. And I understand a lot of times dealing with a security company, it's like, oh, well, we can't really tell you this, that, or the other. But I'm just curious, so what does it look like at the company as far as who's taking care of things? Do you have a bunch of dev people? What does it look like for the company? Who's running stuff?
Right. No, that's a great question, and it's a big question, but I'll do my best to provide you a good answer here. So we do have across the team various skills. I mean, this is, I'd say, one of our strengths actually is if somebody were to try to put our people in a box in terms of, oh, well, this is the kind of person that works at GuardSight, they'd have a really hard time, because across the team we've got just a huge variety of past experience. People that come to GuardSight, it's almost like they're drawn here, and we'll come back to that maybe later.
Yeah,
but to answer your question though, so we do have I'd say the majority of our employees are what we call handlers on duty. These are the people who are watching alerts as they come in, and that can be from any number of systems. So they're are kinds of software that are called endpoint detection and response, so EDR for short. These are this is software that has a little agent on workstations, on servers, or something like that, and it's sending data into kind of a central repository. We also, in a lot of our environments, have servers, huge numbers of servers in many cases, logging data to a central logging server. And we feed all of that into something that is built to detect patterns. So there's other kinds of software out there called SIEM, S-I-E-M. You've probably seen some of those before. Anyway, you'll see things like Sumo Logic or Splunk or some of these things that their whole purpose is to gather that data. Yeah, and then you write rules that alert on certain kinds of patterns. So the idea is you're funneling this massive amount of data into kind of a central place from all different sources, and then you're looking for those kinds of patterns. So it can be network traffic. If you see something anomalous, maybe something leaving an environment on a strange port or going to a domain that's never been seen before. All of these are kinds of things that are what we call indicators of compromise.
Raise the red flag, so to speak.
Exactly, yeah. And so what our analysts do is when something is what we call IOC positive, or internet or indicator of compromise positive, they track that down and they determine if that's really a thing or if there's an alternate explanation for it. So that's the majority of what we do at GuardSight. But we also have people who are, who have other multiple roles. So for example, on my incident response team, the team that I run, we also have the same people who are working to develop, some of the automation rules, as well as integrate, various software stacks into something that we can access very easily via our ticketing system. So hopefully that answers the question. Like I say, it was a big question.
It was kind of a really, really broad question. So, I mean, thank you for kind of getting in, under the hood, so to speak. Kind of staying on topic, but kind of diverting a little bit. help me understand, what do you look for when you're like, when you're looking for somebody to join the team? What stands out, or what qualities do you look for in a candidate?
Oh, can I ask a question before you go please. There? I'm just curious with what he just said a minute ago. How do you, and we hear the AI word all the time.
Right.
Now, everybody is thinking AI is going to take over every job, but kind of what I'm hearing from you, and I just want to know if this is true or not, is this is something that human beings have to do. I mean, could there, I guess in the future, of course, there could be an AI that kind of tracks down, but it seems to me you'd get tons of false positives and all of this different stuff using AI, and that's kind of where you guys are, is you're using human beings to figure out where the real issues are. Would you say that would be a hard thing for AI to replace?
Yeah, for sure. In fact, one of the things, it's funny in the industry, one of the standing jokes we have is that vendors are including the term AI in everything, or machine learning,
right,
when they put out. And it's kind of like, you know, we imagine the conversation goes something like, you know, the marketing team of the vendor goes to the engineer and says, hey, do we have AI in our product? And they're like, no, we have some rules that we write by hand. And they're like, but it kind of looks like AI, right? They're like, no, it's not even a little bit. And then the marketing copy comes out and it's like, no, with AI. you know, I think everybody's jumping on this bandwagon in terms of,
they
where
are
is AI?
And absolutely. That's right? Kind of why I asked the question, because we hear that a lot, especially on the show where everybody's talking about innovation and stuff, but there's still spaces, and we talk all the time, there are places where AI is going to have a hard time replacing the human condition of understanding us humans.
Yeah, I mean, I think just some positions there is no end all be all with AI. It's this is a human task that you have to do. You have to like assess.
For sure.
Yeah. So no, I just wanted a clarification. I
no,
love
awesome.
It. I think I think your answer was great.
Yeah, agreed. For sure. Well, and maybe I can expand on that just a little bit too. So we do recognize that, yeah, as AI develops, sure, it's going to be able to help. But I guess we've always taken the approach that it's like, yeah, we welcome the help, but it's still going to take a human to make that call.
It's not going to replace.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll assist, but not replace.
Yeah.
Yep. And I would argue that, in fact, what we do with you know, kind of our efforts towards automation is you know, indistinguishable from AI if somebody didn't know what we were doing under the hood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there's also an element to this is just my own personal thing, if I can, you know, divert
Please.
For a second.
But, absolutely.
One of my favorite things is what's called a hype curve. And I think we're definitely the crest of the phase one of the hype curve right now. That doesn't mean, what's interesting is what typically follows is the valley of disillusionment, where everybody says, oh, it was all garbage. We were misled with my money. You know, I want my money back. But then what happens is work continues on and eventually actually develops into something interesting. So people, you know, there's a phrase, I believe it's referred to as a Mara's law, but people tend to overestimate change in the short term and underestimate it in the long term. I think that's consistent with the hype curve. You know, eventually it'll be doing some cool stuff for it. Is it doing it now? Not yet. It's getting there, but we view it as more of a partnership with the human, an augment of the human rather than a replacement.
I think that's the perfect example of what happened with the internet. Originally, the internet came out, everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is awesome, cool. And everybody was jumping in and all these startups blew up. And then we had the dot-com burst, you know, 2000, 2000, everything blew up and everybody's like, oh, internet's dead. Screw the internet. Nobody wants to have anything to do with the internet. But then it all leveled out and now we can't live without it.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of how I anticipate AI will go.
Yeah.
I mean,
agreed.
We've been working on AI for a long time, right? It's a developing technology, but it's not done.
Yeah,
nowhere near.
Perfect. It will level off and just become a part of our lives.
Exactly.
And it won't be hyped. It will just be what it is. And we'll like, man, how the hell do we live without this?
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
Cool. So let's get back on path, Brad. I took us down a little bit of a rabbit hole.
I love those rabbit holes because, I mean, those are where the good and interesting things, you know, come out. So I love
absolutely.
It. Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, kind of staying back on course or course correcting. Help us understand. I mean, what do you look for in candidates? I mean, what is a good candidate to you, and what makes one stand out to you that says, okay, this
fits
one is
with the culture. Exactly. You mean, how do you figure that out for you guys?
So, you know, it's one of those things internally we've talked about, and we're like, what is it that we're doing right? Because we continue to get some of the most outstanding people I've ever worked with. And it's like, all right, what is it about our process that, you know, brings these people to us? One of the weird things, but we've heard it from several people who've applied with us, is that something in our website resonates with them. The call to duty, the clear purpose, idea that we are cyber warriors. I mean, this resonates with people. So it's kind of a filter at the beginning. The people who are waiting around, you know, for the 5 o'clock bus tend not to, it doesn't resonate with them. And so we tend to filter just by being who we are initially. So that's kind of the first thing, which has been kind of an odd observation on our part, is that, you know, we are not out there advertising for, you know, trying to hire people. What we do is we keep the pipeline open, and then we, you know, kind of attract the right people, and then we filter. Now, not everybody who approaches us, of course, gets hired. That's, you know,
right.
We've got, yeah, great candidates, and sometimes we just don't have the spot for them. And in a lot of cases, we'll actually try to keep them in mind if something opens later on, if they're still available. But I would say that one of the things we do that may sound really weird in tech is that we are relatively unimpressed by CVs. We are after drive and just that component of whatever it is in the human psyche that gives people the ability to want to achieve. We seek that out more than we do, a ton of certs or a specific degree or anything like that. So it's really strange in that we hire for ability, not necessarily history. So sometimes people have come to us and they really on paper would never ever get a job in cybersecurity, and yet we see something about them that it's like, yeah, this person is driven, they want to change their life, they're going to do what it takes, and so we will give them a shot. And some of those people have turned out to be some of our best performers, with some of those folks are in management now with us. So kind of hard to articulate. I will say this though, we start out with a first round interview for those who, you know, we look through applications, and if for those that look promising, we will give them a first screen, and it is a technical screen. And a lot of times they'll come in there and just be like, I have no idea what I'm doing, you know, this is hard. You know, in some cases we'll say, all right, come back in 6 months. You know, if you're really driven, you know what we're looking for, come back. But in a lot of cases they've done enough work, so they have a baseline of knowledge, if not all the knowledge. And then the second round of interviews is really kind of the cultural fit, the personality aspect of it. So that's getting back to what I think makes our hiring process very special is, you know, yeah, we'll look at the results of the first screen, but that's more of a filter. After that, we really want to just know what kind of person they are.
Yeah. So, to me, it almost sounds like you're more concerned with understanding and relating to the person to see how they can fit your culture and your environment. And you look for that drive in somebody.
I think too, when I hear you talk about the website and when you said that stuff that people kind of are drawn to that, it's almost like we hear all the time about culture. We even talk about it on the show all the time.
We
got to find the right culture. But you're saying that it's your mission that is kind of pulling in people first, and that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's definitely unique.
Would you say that's true? That it's your
Absolutely.
Mission that's kind of pulling people in, and that then the culture comes second after what you're trying to create?
Yeah, so I would say that those who have come in and have said, hey, I'm blown away by what you guys are about. I love mm-hmm. the fact that you guys are into this. You know, it's almost, if I can borrow a term I heard in a video game a long, long time ago, it's like you're warrior monks, you know. It's like, you guys are intense, and I want that. I want to be part of that. And so it's like, when that resonates with people, we're going to listen to what they have to say, because that's kind of how we view what we do.
That's cool. That's awesome. That's a differentiator that I don't think we've heard a lot.
No, I don't think we have. I mean, Yeah, I mean, Bobby, like you said, I mean, I think we've always heard culture,
but we've never heard creating this great culture, but we don't hear about the mission as much.
Absolutely.
Of what we're trying to create. I think that's very cool. And it is it's desirable. I can see where 100%. Man, when I believe in what they believe in, I want to be a part of that, whatever that looks like. And of course, you still you still got to have a decent culture. You still got to be treated decently. You still got to have, you know, a fun place to work or what have you. But I love it that your mission is what driving people there. That's super cool.
And to piggyback off that too, I mean, I think they understand their niche well enough that they understand what they're looking for enough to be able to say, like, hey, look, yes, you have. I think you have what it takes, but you're not quite there yet. So come back in 6 months, and let's reevaluate, and let's have that conversation again. So I think that's definitely a plus as well.
Yeah,
for sure. And I would say as well, the culture kind of derives from the mission. It is strange as that is to say, but it's like when you get people together with a purpose in mind, culture follows. You don't have to create it.
Agreed.
So one of the things we do as well is we are an incredibly positive company. That is, we lift each other up. A lot of I've seen managerial advice about, you should say this to employees or do this to motivate employees. It's like, nah, we build each other up and just keep an eye on each other. And if somebody looks fatigued, we say, hey, man, you need to step away. You need to go dark for a few days. We are just about supporting and lifting each other. And that is our culture.
That's awesome. That's huge. I mean, because understanding and knowing that, you know, somebody's got your back is really, you know, what's most important is, you know, hey, I'm burned out. I need to take a couple days off. But for your manager to be able to see that, that's huge.
So really quickly, how big is the team? Is this a collective of mostly tech? And what kind of divisions do you have? I mean, I'm sure you have a marketing department, a sales department. But I'm assuming kind of your big chunk is your technology. I'm just curious, what does that infrastructure look like, if you can tell us?
Sure. Yeah, you bet. So I would say, just to be clear, in our logo, you may see that it says Guardside and Iron Bow Company. So we were acquired in February by Iron Bow. But what's cool is they have just let us run as we do. So we've got
hear that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Too many takeovers and sellouts, and then they just kind of
get gobbled up and don't become the same.
Yeah. I love to hear it when they know how to do it right.
They've done a really good job of just saying, hey, we the reason we acquired you, by the way, their first ever acquisition. So they're a company of like 1,000 people plus, and they shopped for a long time before they made their first acquisition. And it was just a cultural fit. We talked about culture, but you know, there was just a good vibe
enough
there
synergy
on top of everything else. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Iron Bow is our parent company, but we're a wholly owned subsidiary of Iron Bow. And Guardside itself consists of only about 60 people. But within that, we do have a small sales team. We've got about three, maybe four people on our sales team now. We've got, I say three, maybe four, because I know somebody's, switching over from an analyst position to kind of a sales engineer position. So I'm not sure if that's complete yet. But it's a tiny little sales team. And yet they've managed to do just outstanding work via partners and, you know, via just direct sales. They grew us to what we are today, you know, where we became interesting to an outside party. But the majority of the folks inside Guardside are technical. So I'd say, probably at least 50 out of the 60-ish are technical to one degree or another. Now, we have people at various stages of professional growth, professional development, but the goal is to get everybody, you know, highly conversant with all the things that we do. So within all our operations, I'd say, 35 or 40, just off the top of my head, if I had to guess for a number, probably close to 40, are part of what we call operations. So these are our handlers on duty. These are the people who watch the wire and analyze stuff that comes in. We also have a small offensive security team, so our pen testers, our red team, whatever you want to call them. So we've got about four or five folks on that. And then we have my team, which is special operations, which includes incident response. So these are senior analysts who've been there, done that. When somebody gets popped, we're who you call. You know, we're the fire department, as it were. So that's what our role is. So those are kind of the three main areas of what GuardSight does.
Okay. I'm not sure if you can disclose this, but I'm just curious. I'm gonna throw this question out here. What's the most interesting attack that you've seen?
Huh. Oh man,
you've seen a couple, I'm sure.
Right,
one or two.
No.
What's the one or two that just kind of stands out?
Yeah, so one that always comes to mind is where when we got in the fight, the IT team there was literally duking it out with a bad guy. They were moving and they were closing accounts and, you know, deleting stuff. You know, we got in there and our job was to come in and figure out how in the world they got in there. So we did a deep dive. This was a long one. This was about a 6-week incident response.
Oh, wow.
By comparison, most of the ones we do are, you know, 3 days, 5 days, something like this. So we did a really deep dive in there. And throughout the course of the investigation, we found that it wasn't just one threat actor who'd gotten in and was moving around and doing bad things. There were two, and they came in through two different routes. One of them was phishing. You know, that's like everybody, right? You know, phishing's always a thing. But one of them got in via phishing. Another came in through an unpatched firewall that they thought they had patched, by the way. So they were doing what they should, but they missed a second patch that came along right after. And bad guys noticed that. They came in, started moving around, started to connect outside devices to the environment, and we're getting set up for a ransomware attack. So just the fact that we saw two threat actors moving the environment and had to be aware of what we call target fixation, where everybody wanted to fit these two threat actors into one threat actor, because that's what we usually see. So there was this push to try to, you know, force this narrative, and it wasn't until we stopped and, you know, a member of my team said, I think there's two threat actors in here. They were able to say, oh, yep, because now we see how this threat actor A moves, what the tools they use, kinds of stuff they do, and it's different than threat actor B. And so we were able to actually say that even though they were in the environment at the same time, we could then tease out the differences between the two and you know, complete a report that gave the customer closure on what happened. So
gosh, that brings back memories. I remember... We had a, you know, this was 15 years ago at least. We had something was going on. Everybody's going crazy. Accounts are being locked out. Oh my gosh. You know, when that, you know, IT is funny. It's mellow, you're mellow, and then times of just complete craziness. Come to find out, one of the WAN guys in Germany had done an any on the firewall. For traffic, any, and everybody that knows, if you do that on a firewall, it meant that any traffic from anywhere could come in at any time, and it did.
Wow.
But it took us a while.
We actually had, it's funny you'd say any. That was the second one I was thinking of. That was more recent. We had a situation where, it was any into about half a dozen at least, maybe more IPs, and one of those was running some very vulnerable software. And in that particular case, we actually found evidence that I think three or four different threat actors had at least popped their head in, had a look around, but one of them decided they were going to push it and ransomware the customer. So yeah, the anything was one of the first things we found. We're like, you got to change that now.
You only have to go through that once as a WAN admin to realize, oh yeah, I better not do crap like that anymore. And you know, it's honest. That's a tough one. I mean, you're out there doing a bunch of configs, and you're just not. But it's a hard, that's a hard lesson to learn, but. Anyway, that's beautiful. It's cool. This is awesome. I think we could talk all day, but we do. Yeah. We got two of our last. I think they're fun questions. What do you think about the future of the technology of GuardSight? Where do you think you guys are going future wise?
Yeah. So I mean, we do continue to see slow migration to the cloud. You know, large organizations, of course, take longer and find, you know, all the hard ways to do that kind of migration. So, you know, it's going to take a while. So we continue to see, you know, those kinds of things, cloud assets as being a lot of the new targets. And so being able to recognize, I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's on the cloud, it's secure. It's like, well, not when you leave your credentials.
There can still be threats, right?
In a GitHub repository, right? You know, you leave your creds out in the open, it's not really that secure.
It's as secure as whatever you're putting in the cloud is taking care of it. It's so funny that people think cloud means a magical place. There's still hardware somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That has to be protected.
Yeah. Exactly.
You got to love it.
So definitely that's an element of it. I think we're seeing as well that one of the problems we run into is what we refer to as weapons saturation. So the idea is that in some cases, you know, a vendor comes along and says, hey, our software is so much better than the other guys. So they say, okay, well, we'll give it a try. So they install it, but it's not fully configured. Now you've got two things in there. You've got the previous one plus the new one, and then next year it repeats. And after a while, you get all this buildup of stuff, and it's giving you so much information that, you know, it's not really useful anymore. And so I'd say one of the things that the industry is hopefully coming to an understanding of is that, like, hey, you know, pick the right tools for your environment and get good at those. Don't buy everything that comes along. You're going to...
That's good. Information overload.
That's good
advice.
Exactly. Yep.
Absolutely. That's... Oh, man. I used to... When we deal with vendors... And they would go, yeah, it does 400 things. It does this, it does this, and does this. And I'm like, dude, I need it to do three things. And I want it to do three things without messing up. I don't give a crap that it does 400 things. I need it to do three.
Just three.
Right.
Oh,
it's like the Unix philosophy, right? It's like, do one thing, do it extremely well, and make the output something you can send into something else. You know, that's...
Beautiful.
If vendors did that, that would be an amazing thing.
So true. Oh my gosh.
Right.
Simple is better and safer. Let's just face
Agreed.
It. The more complicated you get, the more easy there is to have vulnerabilities. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being on the show. We got
one more last question.
One last question. Yes.
All right.
We got to ask the last question. So this is a broad one. We like to just get input from everybody that comes on the show. What do you think about the future of technology in general?
And where it's going. And this is more of a personal question. This doesn't have to be related to GuardSide. We just want to get your understanding of where you think it's going.
Right. So, you know, it is funny because I do see so many things that are the general path to something is it's new and shiny, and then, you know, people notice it less, and eventually it's invisible, right? So so we continue to see, you know, Internet of Things with one of my favorite jokes is IoT. The S stands for security. But, you know, there's no turning back from the idea that technology is getting always cheaper. So you're going to see it continue to end up in more and more places. So I think you're going to see things that used to be, you know, rare items for kind of wealthy, you know, first-time adopters. I think you're going to see that stuff continue to get cheaper. You're going to see more stuff embedded. I do think we're in kind of a weird place when it comes to, you know, interfacing technology with human bodies, maybe even human brains. That's something to watch for sure. And to then take the data that's coming from those interfaces and running it through machine learning algorithm and start to get predictive with that. I mean, we're in a weird place. Now, I'm definitely not a dystopian kind of guy. I think there's a lot of upsides to what we're going to see from this, but it is something you need to watch. You know, we have to probably just be aware of some of these kinds of things and how they could be misused. So that's the security guy in me coming out, I guess, is how could it be abused, right? How could these new leaps in technology, this integration with humans, really become kind of a bad or a negative thing?
The first part you talked about, I find really interesting. Do you feel like future technology is going to put everybody, and I think it has already, kind of on an more even playing field, whether you're a company that's doing $1 million in revenue or $1 billion in revenue? Don't you think kind of the tools are making the world a little more less easy for the big companies that can spend millions of dollars? Do you think that's going to just keep going? I mean, is that what you're talking about when you talked about that at the beginning? Is it going to make a more an easier playing field for all companies?
So I think there's some potential there for sure. So I guess I would think of it this way: is the investment at that point is going to be in the developers who are very creative and being able to bring the things together in new and innovative ways, because it's getting cheaper. I mean, a lot of things become open source over time, right? So like what's your barrier to entry? Just having a person who can understand it, who can deploy it. You don't have to pay big licensing fees anymore for things that can do every bit as much as expensive proprietary solutions. But of course, where do you pay? You pay on the human side. You have to have somebody who can actually understand what it is and deploy it. Will it democratize technology? Possibly, right? The big companies, they use a lot of their money to try to keep that stuff out of an environment, but it doesn't always help them. When companies are small and upcoming, they're nimble, they're fast, they can change a lot quicker than the big companies who are somewhat sclerotic as they grow. So
I connect that to media, and personally, 20 years ago, you had to be a part of a big media company, media production company, to do anything on TV or anything like that. The coming of YouTube and everything, now we got people that are making millions and millions of dollars that started with an iPhone or something. Mm-hmm. And that has really, I think, changed the whole media space. Even
it has.
News, everything is anybody can be an expert almost, or at least look legit.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's what might the future of tech, these companies will look legit, because they'll have the same kind of
setup,
back end, backbone, cloud service, whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is an example of how just everything has changed. I mean, it used to be that if you were an author, you were, an up and coming author, maybe you have your first novel out, you'd shop it around to a bunch of publishers and agents and all this kind of stuff. Maybe you'd get a bite, maybe you wouldn't. But now the right TikTok review makes your book go viral, Yeah. So it's changed the whole thing. That whole traditional model can be totally upended by, an influencer, as they say, somebody who really likes your book, who has a lot of followers, just give it a mention. So many things are can be disrupted. Whether they will be or not, I don't know. I'm not very good at making predictions about the future, but I will say that the potential is there for sure.
Cool. Awesome.
Awesome. Wow, this is good.
Yeah, man, this is really good.
Cool. Good stuff. Thank you so much for being on the show.
So Justin,
it's been my pleasure. Yeah. This has been fun.
How can people get a hold of you, and where can they go to learn more about the company? Is it just the website itself, or help me understand that?
Yeah, for sure. Go to guardsite.com. If you want to, if you're interested in some of our services, you want to talk to some of our salespeople, sales@guardsite.com is a great one. And that's a good distro list that way. So reach out that way. And if somebody says, hey, I heard Justin on a podcast, I want to talk to him, they can forward that on to me.
Awesome.
Very good. Excellent.
Well, cool.
Any last words, Brad?
No, I mean, I'm speechless as always.
Awesome. Well, this has been a great show. Thank you so much, and we will see you next time on Jobs in Tech.